Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have co-hosts Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Bichette. We will share with you the wisdom of the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Brachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about the forgiveness process, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, welcome to the show, Mind Shifters Radio.
Hello and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio. I'm Tim Hayes. I'm your host for the first hour, and today is Friday, November 18th, 2022. As always, we're grateful to everyone who's joining us here today, whether you're listening live or through the archives, as we spend another couple of hours teaching and supporting people in using some of the most powerful, effective, efficient, and accessible tools I've ever encountered. These tools are available absolutely free through the tireless efforts of Dr. Michael and Jeannie Rice on the website at whyagain.org, whyagain.org. And if you go to that page and click on the Start Here link in the upper left-hand corner, literally the words Start Here, click on those. It will take you to a page where you can download and read Chapter 24 of Dr. Michael Rice's book. His book is titled, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? And in that chapter of the book, he gives a narrative description and explanation of the primary tool in this work. That tool is called the Reality Management Worksheet, sometimes called the Reality Management Wake-Up Sheet. And it's a tool I've been using to great effect for over 18 years to improve the quality of my life and most of my relationships and to turn any negative emotional experience into part of the infallible guidance system that each and every one of us has been given. You can also download the actual worksheet process itself. It's a simple PDF file. Click the link, download it, print it off, copy it as often as you'd like, and use it over and over again, absolutely free. You can also download a whole host of audio files of shows just like this one, where people have been stepped through that worksheet process. And if you choose to listen to those, sometimes even repeatedly, they can serve as a tutorial for you. If you're not able to call in live and get support, or if there's no support group in your neighborhood or in close proximity to you, you could use listening to those audio files where people have been stepped through the worksheet process as a tutorial to gain maximum benefits from these tools in an efficient, abbreviated period of time. You can also go to your app store and type in the three words Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness. And if you choose to do that, before you're done typing the word forgiveness, you'll see the glowing heart icon. If you choose to tap on that, it will let you download a completely free and private app that contains the Reality Management Worksheet. It also contains an abbreviated version of that worksheet process. And it contains a copy of the Dragon Klingon game, which is a wonderful way to introduce these tools to even younger audiences. And we here at Mindshifters Radio hope that you do all of that soon and often, because it tends to primarily improve the quality of the lives of people who use these tools on a regular basis. And secondarily, it tends to prompt comments, questions, answers, and testimonials. And if you have any of those to share with us, please do so by calling 563-999-3581. If you call that number and press 1, it'll put the little icon of a hand by your phone number, and I'll announce it by your area code, and we can have a conversation. I'll turn on your microphone and announce it by your area code. You can also send an email if you're so inclined. You can email me at tjh@mindshifters-academy.org, or you can email Jeannie at jeanie@yagain.org. That's whyagain.org. And when we get those comments or questions or answers or testimonials, we'll address them on the internet show, and then as time allows, send you a notification about what day and time it was brought up on the show, and you can listen back through the archives to hear the responses. And that brings us to the archives, which is another of the powerful tools that are made available. And this show has been going for 11 and three quarters years now, and almost all of those shows are available in a free archive. And if you go to the whyagain.org website and click on the picture of the microphone, it will take you to a page where you can scroll through any date since January of 2011 and find a show and listen away. Or if you like one, you can click on the link and send it to someone that you think might benefit from listening to it. And I am one of those, we have no idea how many people make use of that, but I'm one of those that makes use of the archives on a regular basis to either go back through a show that I participated in and things seem to be flowing and I'm not even remembering what I said, or a show that I was not able to listen to because of prior commitments. And that's just another, in my mind, wonderful advantage that Michael and Jeannie make available by maintaining their website and this internet show. So let us know how we can support you, what's on your mind, what would be a useful way to spend this time, as our primary intention with this work is to be of service. How can we be of service to you today? 563-999-3581. Since January 10th, we've been doing the Way of Mastery, reading the lessons with commentary and working to try to go slowly enough and repeat and review enough each of the lessons so that where there is an exercise or where there is a tool that can be derived from the teaching itself, we take the time to dig into that a little bit. And the last 2 days have been basically informal reviews and summary. And it just seemed appropriate to do that because the last few lessons have been rather intense, calling us to a greater and greater responsibility, even expanding the sense of responsibility outside of myself and what the interpretations, the meanings that I give, the internal experience I have of the life events around me. And the last few lessons have even been expanding that to say, there is a higher part of me, a greater self, that is going to pull toward me situations that my conscious logical mind, my egoic mind, might say, I hate this, I don't want this, this is a catastrophe, this is a disaster. But my higher self knows I can use that to learn to remain loving and respectful in a variety of difficult situations, and I can strengthen my ability to teach only love, to create the extension of love in form, to consciously focus on that moment to moment, and thereby not only change the internal experience I have, but change the flow of life around me. And lesson 30 is titled, You Were Born to Create. And the text reads, Beloved and holy friends, I come forth to abide with you as merely your brother and your friend. Remember, always that a brother or a sister is not someone who is above you, but who is your equal. Remember always that a friend is one who has chosen deliberately to see in you the perfection of Christ and all greatness that can be birthed through you until you are willing to see yourself in such a light. Then that friend joins with you in a holy relationship to create, to play, and to extend the truth, the capital T truth of capital R reality, what Michael Rice would call actuality. So again, in more lessons than not, they start by saying, beloved and holy friends. And then in several lessons, like this one, they make it explicit. We use these words because we want you to remember we are not above you. You are not below us. We are not below you. We are with you in each new present moment as equals, whether we have a physical body manifested at the moment or not. And then in this lesson, they give the very specific definition of saying a friend is one who will see in you the perfection of the one mind, of the Christ, and all of the greatness that can be birthed through you. And that friend will hold that image for you until you are willing to see yourself in that image, through that lens, in the whole truth of your being. So a friend is someone who has mastered or is practicing this ancient Aramaic dynamic, which has translated and come down to us as the word humility. But in the ancient Aramaic, the word means to look for and see the highest and best in another person, and then choose to cooperate only with that highest and best. Well, here this book is saying that's the definition of a friend. A friend does that. A friend is one who has chosen to deliberately see in you the perfection of Christ and see in you all greatness that can be birthed through you, and to continue to see that until you are willing to see yourself in such a light. So that's what this teaching is doing. This teaching is trying to communicate to you the perfection of Christ that is in you, trying to communicate to you about the greatness that can be birthed through you, and to do that over and over and over again until such time as you are willing to see yourself in that light, through that filter, with that out-picturing, as they talk about in other parts of this lesson. So the title of the lesson is, You Were Born to Create. And then the first paragraph says, beloved and holy friends, you are our equals. We are equal to you. We are with you, and we are here with you to abide with you merely as your brother and your friend. And please remember always that a brother or a sister is someone who is on your level, who is there with you as a co-companion. Not someone who's above you, but someone who is your equal. And remember always that a friend is one who has chosen, deliberately chosen, to see in you the perfection of Christ and to see in you all greatness that can be birthed through you until you're willing to see yourself in such a light. And then when you see yourself in that light and your friend understands that you and they are the same, then that friend joins with you in a holy relationship to create, to play, and to extend the capital T truth of capital R reality, or the capital T truth of actuality, as Dr. Michael Rice would call us to make that differentiation, because the word reality in Dr. Michael Rice's work refers to the images, the individual images and pictures that my mind makes up. We call it perception, and shows those pictures to me and tries to convince me that those pictures are the same as what's going on around me. So the next heading is titled The Difference Between Creating and Making. And the text reads, "For you were born and created to create, not to make." Okay, that's a little confusing. In our language, there's not a lot of differentiation between those two words, to make something or to create something. They're often used interchangeably. The text goes on and says, you might have a question about what is the difference between making and creating. Making requires the special efforts of the egoic mind. Making involves planning what one wants based on what one already knows, and then setting about to find the way to bring it into being according to one's own ideas. Making always has an element of fear. This is so because the ego itself is the fundamental contraction of fear. Creating, in the way that I am using these terms, is quite different. When I say that you were born to create, that you were created to create, I mean that being made in the Creator's image, your only function is to serve as a conduit through which the unfathomable energy, mystery, and beauty of love, capital L love, can be expressed in ways that can be seen in this world. An artist can do that with a brush, a singer with a song, a writer with a word, a friend with a smile, a gardener with a garden. You are in the act of extending creation whenever you surrender your own ideas of what a thing is or is for. And then you choose only to do what you do in order to enjoy the presence of capital L love, of the energy of creation extending, and offering that love to whomever or whatever will receive it. So here's where there are, you know, most of us with the conditioning of the Western mind, we almost always want the conscious logical mind to jump in and make sense of this. This is why it is so difficult when we say to live in the question. The conscious logical mind, as soon as it asks a question, wants to go find the answer and wants to start creating an answer and wants to try to articulate in words an answer. And that quickly creates and then drops us into the trap that Dr. Michael Rice calls the number one pseudo-solution of the non-being mind, and that is, I'm going to figure this out. So most of us, unless we start practicing it and just play with the ideas and concepts and try it in various situations, most of us can't even imagine what it would be like to enter a situation and ask, what's mine to do here, and then not struggle to find out what to do, but to just go in the flow of life and trust, assume, observe how your actions will be informed by subtle and yet powerful energies, love, respect, compassion, joy, aliveness, without any thought to how it's happening. without needing to have the plan, as they just talked about, and especially without the fear of, uh-oh, what if I don't do it right? Because only the ego is going to have fear. And the reason that's going to happen and it's inevitable is because the ego itself is the result of fear. The ego itself is a construct of fear and contraction. The ego itself is a constellation of thoughts and images that we have come to identify with after we thought we could be separate from our Creator. After we thought it might be fun to try and pretend that we could create an experience of being separate from our Creator. So the difference between making and creating is that making requires the special efforts of the egoic mind. Making involves planning what one wants based on what one already knows, and then setting about to find a way to bring it into being according to your own ideas. Making always has an element of fear, since the ego itself is the fundamental contraction of fear. Creating, and this is going to be new for most of us, and this is something that we will have to experiment with, play with, do multiple trials with. I'm consciously resisting saying trial and error method, but trials, just do it. Put yourself in the situation, ask to be shown, and then live in that questioning open space rather than demanding an answer. Creating, the text says, in the way that I'm using these terms, is quite different. When I say that you were born to create, when I say that you were created to create, I mean that being made in the Creator's image, your only function is to serve as a conduit through which the unfathomable mystery and beauty of love can be expressed in ways that can be seen in this world. An artist can do that with a brush, a singer with a song, a writer with a word, a friend with a smile, and a gardener with a garden. You are, in fact, in the act of extending creation whenever you surrender your own ideas of what a thing is or is for. This is why they talk so much about phrases like the divine ignorance. To have an exercise where we actually pick up objects, you know, for 5 or 10 minutes in a day and just observe how, I don't know where this thing came from. I don't know where the materials came from to make this. I don't know who was the first human being to have a thought about creating a lamp or a pencil or a stapler or a cup. And to learn to observe directly how little we actually know. You are in the act of extending creation whenever you surrender your own ideas of what a thing is or is for, and then choose only to do what you do in order to enjoy the presence of capital L love and the offering of that love to whomever or whatever will receive it. The text goes on and says, creation then is the process in which the Creator extends herself or himself from the world of the formless into the world of form. When you choose to invite friends to dinner and have no ulterior agenda except to be with them and to create a good salad and some soup for them just because you love them and because you are in a joyful state of being, when that happens, you are extending the reality and presence of the Creator. surely this is much different than what your politicians do when they invite friends for dinner. Indeed, they're involved in making, while your dinner is in the flow of creation. In the flow of creation, the form itself is always recognized to be secondary. It is a mere instrumentation for the content. In making, the form becomes very important. Why? Because in the making, the egoic mind already believes that it knows what things are and what they are for, and since all things are for the ego's safety and continuance, that's what's important. Therefore, form and the form of how things are done becomes very important, because form is image and not content. In creation, the form is as you most desire it to be because it gives you joy, not because you believe that it will coerce someone else into voting for your party. Imagine then if those of your actors and actresses were more interested in wearing clothing for their Oscar nominations that brought them joy as opposed to seeing how good they could look. What will be acceptable, what will be breathtaking, or what will grab the attention of others. Imagine if that were to happen. Rest assured, many of them would show up in their pajamas. The difference between making and creating is the difference between illusion and actuality. Capital R, reality is the love that the creator is. It is the creator's will to extend that energy of love. You were created out of the will of the creator, and therefore your will expresses love. Your will to express love is the same as that of your creator's will. They are one and the same. The egoic mind is interested in making love. It has very set ideas about what love should look like, what form it should take, how other beings ought to respond, what actions are all right and what are not all right. However, in love, in creation, love merely extends itself with innocence. When your will is one with your creator, you are not in the least bit interested in making love. You are only interested in celebrating the reality, the truth of your being, that you are already in the presence of love, the energy of love, and that you are already as the expression of capital L love. You are innocent and you are perfect just as you are. The form of that expression becomes quite secondary, since it is merely a temporary instrumentation for the fulfillment of the heart's desire to celebrate the actuality of being in capital L love. Let me ask you this question. In your own life, do you exert energy in trying to make love happen, or do you celebrate that you are already in the presence of capital L love? This puts me in mind of the person that I went to graduate school with, and she was married to another person who was in graduate school to become a clinical psychologist, and they had a baby together, and it seemed like the perfect marriage, the perfect relationship. They were both studying all this high-level psychology stuff. And about, oh, I'd say 12 or 13 years later, we, maybe 15 years later, We reconnected after not having any contact for 10 or 12 years. And I said, well, you know, let's meet for breakfast and do some networking. As a psychologist, she was about an hour's drive away from me, but I was willing to drive down there. And so we met for breakfast, and right after the initial pleasantries and how are you, she opened up with, well, I have to let you know that as embarrassing as it is to say this, I'm divorced. And I said, oh, well, so am I. I don't know why you're so embarrassed about that. And she said, well, people ask, what went wrong? You had such a perfect marriage. You're both psychologists. And she said, but the answer I've given to them is that we have argued, violently argued, in some of the most beautiful locations on the planet. So they were both intelligent. They were both psychologists. They both had practice. They brought in money. They were able to travel. And they would go to the south of France, or they would go to beautiful places in South Africa and other places in Europe and Australia, and almost every vacation, they would get into these horrible arguments, bitter resentment. And they were always arguing about, well, there's pulp in the orange juice, or why did you make the reservations for dinner at this time, or, you know, why can't we go over here? And it's always, and this is what this book is talking about. They were trying to make something in the flow of life energy conform to their specific ideas about what it would be. If you really loved me, you wouldn't let them put pulp in my orange juice, even though we're in a 5-star motel overlooking a river in France on a beautiful, picture-perfect weather day. To try to make the external physical realities of life reflect some highly refined, preconceived pattern. That's making, that's not creating. And I've talked about this before. One of the things that comes to mind is to share that when I began the practice of getting up in the morning and putting more of my energy into watching my internal response and look for the earliest possible warning signs that I was feeling tight or tense or in resistance, and then call a timeout for myself and then just turn the focus inside and ask, how am I creating this? And how is this flow of life that's going differently than I had anticipated, how is it going to turn out better than I could have imagined? Or how is it going to turn into a blessing? Or how does it hold a lesson I need to learn to move to the next level? When I started practicing that and really putting energy into it almost every day, and I could tell the days I didn't. I'd get through to the middle of the day or near the end of the day, and I'd all of a sudden have a realization. Oh, I've been feeling tight and tense. Oh, I'm upset about, you know, this or that, and I think it's this outside thing, but it's really just the interpretation I've put on it. And then I would soften and breathe and lighten up, and then I would get back into the habit for another string of days in a row, and it started to build momentum. And about 3 years into that practice, people would start to question me, how do you do it? How do you stay so calm? And I, by that point, it was just kind of automatic. I would start to feel a tightness or a tension, an anger or fear or sadness and upset, and I would turn the focus inside myself with a calming breath and sit with these questions. I wonder how this is going to work out better than I could have imagined. I wonder how this is going to turn into a blessing. I wonder how I'm using this situation to generate my negative emotion. I wonder how this series of events that I hadn't planned and seems like a disruption is going to lead me to be introduced to people I wouldn't have met any other way. I wonder how I can be a blessing to myself and others in this moment. That series of questions that would just rotate and sometimes shift and expand, but it helped keep me in that open, questioning, living in the question, observing space so that I could more easily go with the flow of creation and add loving, respectful, compassionate, gratitude-based energy to each moment. And my life, my experience of life, life circumstances was getting transformed. And the first thing I'll tell you, because it goes beyond words, but the first thing I would tell people is, this transformed my life for the better in ways I can't really put into words. But I'll say these two things. The first thing that was clearly observable is that as I sit here now, having practiced this for probably, 15 years now, I spend the tiniest fraction of time in my life in negative emotional states compared to what I did before I started this practice. If for no other reason, then as soon as I start to feel a negative emotional state, I take that calming, soothing breath and turn the focus inside and start looking at what I'm doing to create it. And if I see clearly how I'm creating it and I see it as something that's beneficial, I can continue to keep creating it. And if I see it as something that's a distraction and detrimental, I can stop, change, shift, put it down, relax, cancel the goals, etc. The second thing I'll tell you to point towards how much better my life has been is, but from the use of this tool or this pattern of thinking, is that I have seen so many weird little coincidences, blessings, miracles, whatever you want to call them, that I never saw before. They were probably always there, but I couldn't see them when I would go into tightness and tension and contraction and anger, and I would be saying, this is bad and this shouldn't be happening. And because when I soften and breathe and open up and put myself in that receptive state, I see more. My field of view gets broader. And I start to see little blessings, coincidences, synchronicities, as Jung would call them, and I can take advantage of them. That's how I read this. When I'm in the flow, when I accept the fact that life is a flow of creative energy and I am a part of that, when I don't spend my mind energy trying to make something happen from a fear base or from the state of contraction, when I go with the flow and add the loving, creative energy that is my true nature to each moment, and I just watch with joyful anticipation the unfolding of life, that's how I read the difference between making something versus creating something. Back to the text, paragraph I read previously said, the difference between making and creating is the difference between illusion and actuality. Actuality is the love that the Creator is. It is the Creator's will to extend that love. You were created out of the will of the Creator, and therefore your will to express love is the will of the Creator. They are one and the same. The egoic mind is interested in making love. It has very set ideas of what love should look like, what form it should take, how other beings ought to respond, what actions are all right and what actions are not all right. It's a good bet that no one listening to these words, or that everyone listening to these words, has heard somebody say, well, if you loved me, you would. That's trying to make life and form conform and to value the form over the content. The text goes on and says, but in creation, capital L love merely extends itself with innocence. When your will is one with your Creator, you're not the least bit interested in making love. You're only interested in celebrating the reality that you are already in the energy of creation, love. And you are already as the expression of the energy of creation, love. You are innocent and you are perfect just as you are. The form of that expression becomes quite secondary since it is merely a temporary instrumentation for the fulfillment of the heart's desire to celebrate the reality of being in the energy of love. This book has said in a number of different places, your body is merely a very temporary communication device. You are always communicating to everyone and everything around you what you value most. The text goes on and says, let me then ask you, in your own life, do you exert energy in trying to make love happen, or do you celebrate that you are already in the presence of love? For in the former, you must coerce other beings to join your making, and then try to persuade them of how they ought to be behaving, performing, accepting, and receiving, so that you feel you have succeeded in manifesting what you have already determined in the mind. Making love requires others. Creating love, that is, extending the energy of love, requires nothing but your will and your willingness. This means that you are perfectly free and do not require and do not need the world to show up in any certain form before you decide to be in love. When you are in love, love will guide the expression of form. That is truly how simple it is. You will know right away if a smile is enough, whether to another human being or to a leaf on a tree. You will know if you are with another exactly how to express it. There will not be a question. There will not be a doubt. There will be no interference of the egoic mind. There will be no fear. For when the mind is truly in the will of the Creator, there is no time. When the mind is truly in the will of the Creator, there is no time. Since there is no time, there is no reference to the past and no reference to the future. For these things abide in the duality of time. They are not part of what alone is eternal. The past has passed away. The future is, at best, a fantasy in the mind. The present is where the Creator abides. So this last bit of this paragraph, a couple of paragraphs back, says, when you exert energy in trying to make love happen, you are not celebrating that you are already in the presence of love. When you're trying to make love happen, you must coerce other beings to join your making and then try to persuade them of how they ought to be behaving, performing, accepting, and receiving. So the making love requires others. The creating love, that is extending love, the energy of creation that you are a part of, requires nothing but your will and your willingness. This means that you are perfectly free to do, and you do not require and you do not need the world to show up in any certain form before you decide to be in love. This has my mind flashing to Roger McGowan sitting in a death row cell in Texas, 10-foot by 6-foot by 6-foot cell for something he didn't do. And he is choosing to extend loving thoughts and energy. He's choosing to read spiritual teachings. He's choosing to understand that love is the easy path. Hate is the difficult role to play. he doesn't need them to take his case back to court and give him a pardon. He doesn't need his cell to be upgraded. He doesn't need the guards to quit being abusive in order for him to celebrate being the expression of the creative energy in form, choosing to share only his loving thoughts, choosing to teach only love. He doesn't have to wait for that because he's tapped into, from wherever he got this wisdom, he's tapped into the very same wisdom that the Way of Mastery is talking about here. We don't have to wait. We don't have to demand that circumstances and situations change before we choose for love. The next segment is titled, Abiding in Love in Each Present Moment. And the text reads, the peace of Christ, then, depends on your willingness to abide in the present for no other reason than to extend creation. Your willingness to be one who receives love, one who acknowledges the presence of love, one who breathes love and then allows it to flow through the body-mind, through the voice, through the handwritten word, through the wink of an eye, whatever it is. Then you're done with it and you're on to the next moment. The peace of Christ comes only to that mind that withdraws valuation from the past and the future and surrenders to the present. For only in the present can capital L love be felt, known, and extended. Such a mind is a creator, and through that mind, the perfection of love's extension flows without impediment, without obstacle, and without mistake. The mind, then, that is free from the egoic need to make, control, and shape, is free from identification with the past and anxiety over the future. And it abides in the perfectly eternal now, for no other reason than to receive the awareness that it abides in love's perfect presence, and then allows that mysterious reality through that mind, right where it is, as it is. In that last sentence, it says the word allows that mysterious reality. And what struck me as I read that is how absurd it is to try to not allow the flow of life. How absurd it is for me to get tight and tense and angry and upset about anything that happens, since it's part of the flow of life and I don't have the ability to go back in time and change it. And I know I get this from a lot of people. The Western mind says, what are you talking about? Of course you've got to go in there and right wrongs and do good and change this and change that and fight for this and fight for that. And I get it. I understand. I've been there myself. And I suppose one of Guy Finley's concepts about everything is in scale. So at one level of scale, yes, if I'm in the presence of someone who's doing a violent act on somebody who's, you know, less powerful or smaller, or that, you know, it might be the thing for me to do physically in that moment to step between the two of them, or to, if I'm big enough and strong enough to, you know, wrap somebody up so they can't hurt or hit another person, that yes, at that level, that might be true. And at another level of scale, even in that moment when I'm intervening, if I choose anger, if I choose fear, if I choose hurt or confusion, and add that mental emotional energy to this action I'm taking, I'm gunking up the works. I'm adding a counterproductive energy to the field in the moment. And I've had a number of different situations in my life. I remember the training I had as a probation officer and then a jailing supervisor counselor and then a juvenile hall supervisor counselor and a psychiatric hospital psych tech and a therapeutic day school psychologist and all of these various places where I worked where we had to be trained in how to restrain people without the staff or the patient or the student getting hurt. Every one of those trainings said, keep your emotions out of it. So I can intervene in a moment when I see some violence happening to someone in front of me or some serious injustice happening in front of me without needing to get angry, without needing to judge, this is bad, this is wrong, this person's right, etc. I don't need to pour mental emotional energy into that in order to be present in the moment and choose an action or let an action flow from me when I'm in direct observation of all of the various factors of life in the moment. And I have memory, there are several of them coming up, of times in all of those various jobs I had where that's exactly what happened. And after the fact, people would be questioning me, how did you do that? How did you disarm this guy? How did you get, you know, everybody to the ground safely? How did you stop that person from, you know, how did you catch that thing in midair? I have no idea. All I know is that in those times where I wasn't judging this as bad or wrong, I wasn't thinking this person's horrible, I wasn't generating a negative emotion towards this person or that person, the actions that flowed through me, from me and through me, were far more productive than those times when I've been upset. Or I thought I'm better than somebody, or I thought this person really needs to be put in their place. It almost never goes well. When my thought process, when my egoic process is trying to make a certain outcome happen. So they're recommending for us here, training ourselves, practicing to abide as love in each present moment. They're recommending that we start to recognize that the peace of the Christ mind depends on our willingness to abide in the present moment for no other reason than to extend this loving energy, this creative energy. The text says, to be one who receives capital L love, who acknowledges the presence of capital L love, who breathes love, and then allows it to flow through the body mind, through the voice, through the handwritten word, through the wink of an eye, whatever the gesture is, then you're done with it and you're on to the next moment. The peace of Christ comes only to that mind that withdraws its valuation from the past and the future and surrenders into the present moment. For only in the present can capital L love be felt, be known, be extended. Such a mind that's in the present moment, that is feeling, knowing, and extending love, that mind is a creator. And through that mind, the perfection of love's extension flows. It flows without impediment, it flows without obstacle, and it flows without mistake. The mind then is free. It's free from the egoic need to make, to control, to shape. It's free from the identification with the past and the anxiety over the future. That mind abides in the perfectly eternal now. It abides there for no other reason than to receive the awareness that it abides in love's perfect presence. And then it allows that mysterious reality to flow through that mind. Right where it is, right as it is. It does not need to make a show. This is not about having a prescribed set of activities to do. You are merely present in the moment, and love lives you. Love flows through you. Love sees through you. Love breathes you. Love acts through you. Love lives through you. The text goes on and says, holy relationship, then, is where any two beings choose to come together, and each of them individually chooses to be in the presence of capital L love. Then, whatever happens, happens. Perhaps one will sit in a chair and read a book while another one watches a movie. Perhaps they will come together and create a beautiful dinner. It really becomes quite irrelevant because they will be moved by the mysterious energy of capital L love itself, which is the will of the Creator, creating experience through its creations. And when that moment is gone, it's gone. The mind of each of them simply finds itself in a new present moment. I tell you that my mind is flooded with all of these memories of the various jobs I've had and various intense, you might call them crisis situations I've been through, where there wasn't any thought. It was just reaction. There was action from being awake and aware. There was a recognition of the events in the moment, and there was acceptance, allowance, and response. And there were quite a few of them over the years. They didn't happen day in and day out, but they probably happened 4 or 5 times a year for 8 or 10 years when I was working through those kinds of jobs. And it would begin to elicit from others questions like, oh my God, how did you do that? Well, the answer to it is it was done without thought. It was done without the fear. It was done because I was, for whatever reason, fortunate enough in that moment to be awake and aware and living from direct observation. And as Krishnamurti would say, I let the truth of life act on me, and my actions flowed in direct response to that, without any distorted filter, without any judgment, without any fear. And this last segment that we were reading is inviting us to practice living in the question, living in the present moment, living as that open conduit, bringing our conscious awareness into the focus of any time we create a tension or a resistance or a judgment, and quickly return ourselves to the open, questioning, allowing, surrendering that is the activity of capital L love. So again, here we are. We're on a Friday. We're coming to the close of our first hour. Please stick around for the second hour. I just saw Jeannie Rice's number pop up on the board. So I will remind us all that we come from love. We're made of the stuff we call love. We actually are love, the energy of creation expressing in form, and everything else is false. Welcome, Jeannie Rice.
Thank you, Dr. Jim. I appreciate that.
You're very welcome and deserving. Have a wonderful weekend and a great show.
Oh, you too. Have a good weekend. So welcome, everybody, to the second hour of Mind Shifters Radio. Today is Friday, November the 18th, 2022. And our call-in number is 563-999-3581. And press 1, and that puts you into queue to talk to us. We'd love to hear your comments and questions because that makes this your show. And while we're waiting on Michael to dial in, we did, excuse me for being out of breath, we did sit with Yinka. You know, the book club is usually the second and the fourth Thursday of every month, but since next Thursday is Thanksgiving for us, then they changed it. So that's going to happen on Friday, the 25th, same time. So I will put that out on the website as well, but the book club will not be on the 24th, but will be on the 25th. So we welcome you to go to the website. We're actually planning on doing a video with Yinka at her request, and we'll put it on the website, and she's also going to use it, and it's to just kind of direct people around the website and where to click to find what. And so we'll be putting that out. I think we are going to be doing that on the 22nd, so this coming Tuesday. So it'll be out there just a day or two after that, so you can watch for that. Be sure and check out all the different things. If you click on the Why Again, there are three big blocks right in the middle of the screen, and those take you to the most common things that people look for. One is the book, and it is in 8 languages. There's the Mind Shifters Radio Show, where you can find the archives and also information on how you can listen, whether it's by podcast or internet or whatever. There's the wake-up sheets. And then on the second row, there's the videos to purchase to stream. There is the regular shop for the hard DVDs, CDs, and books. And then other worksheets. And so that's any other worksheet, all the rest of the tools besides the forgiveness worksheet. So those are like one-click buttons that'll take you there. Otherwise, you can click on the start here in the upper left corner, or you can scroll down and click on the bullseye in the middle of the page. They'll both take you to where you can find the tools. And I've got them kind of separated out and broken down into different sections. So like, why is this happening to me again? Chapter 24 link, or the PowerPoint of Aramaic Forgiveness, the Stress Reality Management wake-up sheets. There are other adaptions that other teachers have made changes to some of the worksheets and used them in their support groups. So we've put some of those out there. MP3s of special radio shows. There's all the other worksheets, the Forgiveness app, how you can go to complete the wake-up sheets online, a link having to do with addictions. So there's different little sections under that, and so those will each take you to different places. Underneath all those links, there are learn what tools to use when, just kind of some guidance. There's testimonials about the work. There are hints for those among us who have no issues. And, you know, I always say when I think of that, and some people say they don't have any issues. Well, if you've taken care of all of your fear and grief and anger and sadness and frustration and irritation and all of those things, and you've handled all those, then you can start doing worksheets on the good things. When you think something outside of you, a person or an event, makes you happy, you know, going shopping makes me feel fulfilled. When so-and-so gets me flowers, then I am just thrilled. You know, so if you think things outside of you bring you joy and pleasure, any more than things outside of you bring anger, happiness, sadness, grief, whatever, it's all the same thing. Any emotion that you think is caused by something outside of you, you can do a worksheet on. And so it doesn't always have to be done on negative things. So there you have it. There's my intro, and I'm going to welcome Michael.
Well, thank you, dear heart, and I'll just pick up where you left off because you're right on track with that piece of information, and that is, we can take it to a whole other level as well, and that is, if you think that through your eyes you have ever seen anything in the outside world, You're just as mistaken as believing that something outside of you causes what's happening inside of you to happen. So, you know, it's been well proven. And actually right down to the point where they've measured the, I forget exactly what it is, 7/10,000ths of a second delay when an experience happens in the world, and the mind, taking time to build its perception of it, shows you a picture that literally you've never seen anything with your eyes. It just has never happened. CIA has confirmed that in their research. There's a link on the site. You can download their book free from their, well, actually, we've got it on our site now because they kept moving it around. They did research on human intelligence and wrote a book. I don't know how many millions it cost taxpayers, but you can download it free. And there's a whole section on perception. And here's what they say. The mind does not, what word do they use? Observe.
Record.
What's happening in the world. Record. The mind does not record reality. The mind generates reality. And each person is experiencing their own individual and unique reality. Now, if you can get that one firmly planted in your brain, and it's so opposite everything the world tells us, then you recognize that there are qualities of perception that are available to you that are far beyond perhaps what you're experiencing. And one of the reasons for doing the work that we're speaking of this healing process that we're speaking of, and in particular, utilizing the forgiveness process, one of the reasons for that is that you can upgrade your perception. You can make it more accurate, more useful, more, corrected and brought into alignment with truth. It will serve you in every arena to have a perceptual mind, a mind that can produce constructs that are actually in harmony with and accurate about the external world. But you can't get the external world through that perceptual device any more than when you look at a TV show, you say, oh, there's Joe Blow, the actor. The Joe Blow, the actor, isn't in the TV. There's a picture that looks like Joe Blow, the actor, produced by the TV, but Joe isn't in there. You know, Joe might have made that movie 50 years ago. He's not there. And your brain may have made up the perceptual construct that you're experiencing, especially if you're experiencing it as painful, might have made it up 50 years ago or 50 generations ago. And until you bring correction to that mind, you will not have a mind that serves you at the highest level as possible to serve you. So when we bring the instrument into alignment with truth, when we remove the content, especially content based in hostility and fear. Hostility and fear are sure markers that your mind is generating its constructs at a level of accuracy that is less than accurate, less than true. And they're the places where you start out utilizing the forgiveness process. And then, of course, as Jeannie said, if you hold the belief that something outside of you is making you happy, that's just as sure and true a denial as thinking that somebody made you mad. And each of those is a fit subject for forgiveness. And then it's kind of like, you know, your computer, you go, oh, have I got a really hot, top-notch computer here, or I've got an old clunker? Have I got something that's based in the past? And, oh, man, you know, to generate something, to get more than one program opening, oh, what a hassle it is. Or have I got the latest technology, zip, zip, it works and it rocks? Well, you know, if you ask most anybody, they'll say, give me the most up-to-date, give me the best technology possible. I want this computer to serve me in the best way it can possibly serve me. Well, your perceptual mind's in the same category. You want a mind that can serve you at the best level possible. And that means that if there are inaccuracies in it, you want to do the work of removing those inaccuracies so that your mind gets back on track and produces the highest level of output possible. So that's kind of one of the reasons for doing this work, one of the reasons why we're here bringing this forward, because, of course, when you realize that the construct your mind sets up for you oftentimes are based in experiences that are generations and generations and generations old, and if we're stuck in a perception that's based on something that happened generations ago, then what the ancients would have said is we're blind. And or in the extreme, if we're really stuck in past perceptions, if in every situation the mind generates its picture, its construct, and we put that in front of or between us and the actuality, then what the ancients would have said is you're dead. That passage where Yeshua says to man, let the dead bury the dead. Let the blind lead the blind. Until you've got your mind upgraded to truth and you desire to honor truth, and when there's hostility or fear, you quickly, easily, and willingly say, oh, my mind's off base again. Here I go. I've got work to do. Oh, here's my rage. That's my mental defect. That's my mental illness. Literally, rage is a mental illness. I love how Einstein talked about it. He said, anger is found only in the bosom of fools. Only a fool will tolerate an angry mind. And you go out and you take a look at what's going on in the world, and you can see that, geez, who's running the world? And what can we do about it? Well, that's the title of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again, and What You Can Do About It. You can, by the way, download the book free from our website in any one of, I don't know, 8 or 10 different languages. If you just go whyagain.org, and in the middle of the page, you'll see a picture of my book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? Click on the picture. Drill down. It'll take you to a free download of the book. You can, the book is out of print right now, so we can't sell you one, unfortunately. However, you can go to Amazon or eBay, and usually the book's available there for, you know, $3, $4, $5, $6. So there's an opportunity to download the book free, and or if you like a paper copy, of course you can download it and print your own, but pretty inexpensive usually on Amazon. Fortunately, back in the, you know, it's been more than 25 years ago that we published the book, going on 3 decades. Wow. It's a little shocking that we first published the book, and you know, I think we did 3 different printings of it. And we ran out, and since we haven't been traveling, we have not reproduced the book in print at this point. We're working on doing a rewrite or an update. Actually, if you look at our last newsletter, there is a self-healing course in the newsletter, and that's really the update of the book. That's the latest that we've got, and the beauty of it is that there's, you know, with technology, there are links to everything that we're talking about. You know, we're not just going to say, oh, you could go and download the book from the CIA website. Bingo, there's the link. Oh, here's how forgiveness works. Bingo, here's the link. So I don't know how many links are in that. And at some point, I'm planning to publish that as an ebook so that we can constantly upgrade and add links to it that document and bring people into understanding of how this device called the mind works, its relationship to what we call our bodies, and our relationship to what's going on around us in the world. So we're delighted that you're here to be part of the process. If you are really serious and you're going to engage the tools, you can go again to the website, whyagain.org. And in the upper left-hand corner, you can click the link that says Start Here, and it'll start walking you through the whole process of forgiveness. Everything that we've got is there. And it's free. You can also go to your app store on your phone. And when you do, type in the words Heartland, H-E-A-R-T-L-A-N-D, Aramaic, A-R-A-M-A-I-C, forgiveness. You'll be looking at the world's only forgiveness app. Download it. Totally, completely private app. One permission required to use it. Two, if you want to save your work to a PDF, you have to give the app permission to write to your hard drive. But otherwise, and from within the app, you can write us. Any stage of the app where you've got a challenge, yeah, I'm on step four and I don't understand it. What do I do with this? Click, hit the button, write us a text or write us an email, hit send. Jeannie will get it, and the next radio show will address your question. So we're looking to make this as live and as supportive as we possibly can. The key here is forgiveness. And not the kind of forgiveness that the world talks about letting others off the hook, but about going inside yourself and removing what never belonged. And it's interesting. You know, we've done a lot of work over the last three decades plus with A Course in Miracles. And there is a very specific definition of forgiveness in the Course that matches exactly what Yeshua taught 2,000 years ago. And in three plus decades of working with thousands of people who've worked with the Course, I've never met anybody who's found that definition. I've never met anybody that knows how to forgive based on the Course's directions. And I say that realizing that I myself had never seen it. I didn't find it. I didn't recognize it when I saw it until I did the work with the Aramaic and then with those brain cells. So I went, oh, there's how you forgive. And to put a foundation under the forgiveness process is to recognize that the mind generates reality. You know, there's some Harvard research that says in a time frame where 10,000 brain cells are firing, the max amount of data that goes into that perceptual construct is 9 bits of data, very tiny fragment. And something determines which 9 bits the mind uses. You'll notice you're never upset. I mean, unless you're just a totally miserable person, you're never upset with people who are fulfilling all the goals that you have for them. You only go into some form of anger or fear, sadness or grief, when somebody isn't fulfilling a goal that you have for them. Now, that's a big clue. That's a big key in how this process of forgiveness works. And the word forgive in Aramaic is the word shebag or shebak, and it literally translates to cancel. And the driver for perception, the reason why you're only ever upset, why your mind only ever serves an upsetting construct, is when you hold a goal for someone, including perhaps yourself, and that individual is not fulfilling, or that group is not fulfilling those goals, or that dog or that cat, doesn't matter. And that's when the mind uses content based in pain driven by the goal to produce that painful construct. And so as much as it seems ridiculous until you really understand how the mind works, the key to forgiveness is in any given situation. You know, I got home and the dog had messed on the floor and I wanted the house to be spick and span when I got home. I had guests coming and I'm in a rage. I want to kick the dog. Why? Because I have a goal. The dog did not fulfill the goal. My mind uses dynamics based on my experience with my power person than to build the construct in my mind that contains that rage or that upset. And so when I cancel a goal, that construct collapses in my mind. And when it collapses in on its own footprint and gives me access to what lies underneath that construct. Now, if you go to the Course, it's a workbook lesson 305, paragraph 8, and it defines exactly how to forgive. although it doesn't say, here's how you forgive, but it's there. And what it says is, let go all the things you think you want. That, of course, would be your goals. They have a different term for it. They call them trifling treasures. Let go all the things you think you want, your trifling treasure put away. So when you cancel the goal, the trifling treasure, that thing you think is important that you want, then what happens is, having removed the driver that causes your mind to build a disturbing, upsetting, pain-filled construct, that construct collapses in on itself. And when it collapses in on itself, you've got access to what lies underneath it. So the Course says, let go all the things you think you want, your trifling treasure put away, and leave a clean and open space within your mind. Perception collapses. And now you've got access to what underlies that pained perception. Rather than something pained that the average person denies, dissociates from, hides from themselves, and blames everybody else when that comes up, when that happens, when it happens that way, that unconscious dynamic is then projected, that painful content is projected into my brain's image of whoever I've got the goal for, and that's when I can say, see, you made me mad, because now my pain is integrated into my brain's image of them. I still have the pain. I'm still in relationship with my pain, but it's an indirect relationship where I'm fooled and I believe that it belongs to someone else. When I cancel the goal and the perceptual construct of my mind collapses into the unconscious part of my mind from whence it comes, I'm now back in direct relationship with that energetic pattern that causes my pain. And when I bring that unconscious pain forward directly rather than indirectly by projecting it, I get to bring that part of my mind to love. The Course talks about bring the world you do not want to the one you do. So you'll notice in the step before you get into the canceling of the goal in the worksheet, you get focused on and you bring forward conscious active present love. And then you cancel the goal, collapse the perception in on itself, and you get to bring that energetic pattern. Oftentimes, it comes up in the form of a memory. And when that content is exposed to love, there's a transmutation of energy, a dissolution of the energy that never belonged within the structure. And that's how forgiveness works. Now, I understand very well, because it's so complex. I mean, that sounds really simple. Michael, that's great. Yeah. You know how long it took me to make it that simple? It took me 35 years of working with the forgiveness process full time, day in, day out, day in, day out, for 35 years to finally go, oh, that's how it works. Now, of course, it's simple as ABC. You got the brain cells for, you know, perception. It's a construct. What drives it? You can collapse it. Hey, it's easy to explain. 35 years to understand why and how you would do such a silly-ass thing as cancel a perfectly good goal. The more in pain you are, the more disturbed you are, the more upset you are, the more important it is to locate, identify, and cancel the goal that's driving your perception at that moment. And when you do, you get to drop back into direct relationship with what you denied, dissociated from it, or projected into your brain's image of someone else. And then the projection just dissipates and disappears. Now that person come along and do the same thing that, you know, they've been in your face 1,000 times or 1,000 times you've been in rage. You clean the rage out of yourself, and that person comes and does the thing, and you look at them and go, oh, well, that's interesting. I remember them. That used to bring a lot of rage up for me. And I didn't used to say it brought rage up for me. I used to say, that really makes me mad. Is there anything in your life you say, that really makes me mad, sad, glad, afraid? That makes me hateful. What you're identifying is parts of your mind that hold mad, sad, and hateful, and you're projecting them into your brain's image of everyone else. Cancel the goal. Let go the things you think you want. Your trifling treasure put away. Collapse a perception. Leave a clean and open space within your mind. And now the active presence of love comes forward in you. And you are freed of a pattern that may be literally 500 generations old. So that's the story of forgiveness. And I like to tell it often because, of course, I get to remind myself. But also I've seen people working with these tools for years, and they're still talking about how they forgave them and how somebody else made them mad or somebody else made them sad or afraid. If you've got 1,000 generations of people in your bloodline that belong to the one world religion, and one world religion is a religion of blame. If you've got 1,000 generations of your bloodline that belong to that religion, it's not an easy religion to let go of. It's not easy to get your mind to go, oh, there's rage moving in me again. Oh, there's sadness. There's fear moving in me. Because the addiction is to avoidance and the blame game. So there are people out there talking about the one world religion and how it's coming and how satanic it is. Well, it is satanic. The word Satan, by the way, in Aramaic means the resister, one who misleads. So the one world religion is very satanic. Most people, you tell them they're responsible. You just inform them, gee, I've watched you go through that 20 different times. Have you noticed you're the one who was there every time? And what do? Go into resistance. No, wait a minute, you don't understand. And then they'll explain to you how somebody else did it to them. I mean, right up to the very top echelons of the country. Just listen. Every time certain things don't go certain people's way, they talk about how, oh, look at the victim I am. Look what they've done to me. They're doing it to me again, or they're doing it to you. You should be angry. You should go out and attack someone. And people who have angry minds get suckered into that and cooperate. It creates a pretty insane game. So we're here to hopefully support the world in cleaning up the insane game, getting back to the presence of love, function truly as human beings. That's our purpose here. And of course, as Richard Bach says, we teach best that which we most need to learn. Here we are learning it, level after level after level. So delighted that you're here to be part of the conversation, and Miss Jeannie, do we have anybody in the phone queue with a hand up or anybody in the chat room with a thought for us? Or any questions from the app?
I'll go over to the other email and check that out, but there's no questions either place. So if somebody presses one, we have 31 minutes. We've got plenty of time to address your question.
And so if you're out there in listener land, and especially if you're listening to one of those stations where we can't see you in our control panel, our call-in number is 563-999-3581. If you call that number, you'll be listening to the show directly on your phone. Then we can see you on our control panel. So if you push 1, that will raise a hand in the control panel. We'll know you want to talk to us, and we'll have a conversation. So how can we support you? What's on your mind today? Is that little synopsis make sense for you? And or does it leave you with questions or any form of confusion or need for support in bringing it to understanding?
And we have a hand up.
I know. No, oh, great. Let's say hello.
610, it's Miss Susan. Welcome.
Hi. Hi, guys.
Welcome, young lady. Yeah. How are you?
Hi. Okay, I have a question from a while back, but I did love when you said, do the future, just come into the presence. I forget when you said that during this talk, but to bring whatever is going on in either department, future, when we look at the future, we feel maybe anxious or anticipatory happiness, or anxious, and when we look at the past, we may have regrets. coming right into the presence. Present seems like the only way to do well. But and so here I am going into the past. You asked me to look at the Power Person worksheet, the long one, and do it as if I
right.
was my son-in-law. And I did it as best I could as my son-in-law. I haven't seen him or talked. Sorry? I didn't hear what you said.
What did that show you? What did that do for you?
I haven't talked to him in years. I hear about him through various grandsons as they go in and out of his good graces. For instance, he has totally disowned both his mother, his former wife, and now Lukey. He has cut Luke completely off. He doesn't want anything to do with him. And he hasn't spoken to his mother in maybe 5 years, 4 years, maybe longer. Mother's 84. Because he sees those people as bad, evil, etc. And so doing this Power Person thing made me realize that I'm probably just imagining who this man is, and I'm doing it from the point of view of my own imagination. And I ended up with a picture of a man who is unreachable, unsalvageable by within our human realm. I'm not saying God can't still work with him, but I ended up not really knowing. It was easy to answer the questions as if I was him, but it's my idea of him. I guess my question is, how can I find the truth when I don't, all I can see is my own constructs. I don't know this man at all. All I know is that he, for instance, the middle grandson now is in his good graces, and he actually paid one of the grandson's bills, which is wonderful because we've been footing the bill for him for years, for his school, his food, his car, his meal plan, anything extra that he might need. The son has now, Jacob, has not spoken to us in several weeks because his father's opinion of us is that we are really, really bad people. And Jacob appears to have adopted his view of us. And so we're getting a long rest from the drama of being with him, you know, on the phone or whatever. But it's like he's
being
gone
the one
down
supposed to fulfill his goal.
Right.
You're getting a reprieve from being the ones who have to fulfill all his goals.
Right. We're getting a rest. And he's not coming to us for Thanksgiving, for instance, even though he's a five-hour drive away and could. But I imagine, see, I guess what I'm saying is I imagined this whole worksheet, and it's pretty shocking. And I don't know what to say about it except that he's inside me as my brain's construct, and I don't feel very good about that. I don't feel very healthy. I feel as if I'm holding a loving space for him, but I absolutely don't know what to do with this person. It isn't like somebody who does the worksheets and accepts guidance and learns. And maybe he is learning. His latest plan is he's engaged to a woman from Colombia who doesn't speak English. Boy, is that one way to get around problems, not be able to understand each other verbally. He's engaged to her, and he's moving to Colombia to live with her down there. So he's trying out a whole new life as far away from his family as he can get. I don't know
well,
if there's a question
there
in here, Michael, but that's just a report.
Well, there is one major problem with the geographic cure. When somebody takes the geographic cure, they go along. But my offering would be, as you're seeing his behaviors from a different perspective, one of the things you now know is virtually everything that his power person did to him. And I would suspect, knowing you, that that would open significant compassion for him. Because all those behaviors, all those things you're talking about, I mean, I guarantee you, we could go back to the moment in his life when exactly that was being done by his power person to him. Like, as sure as night follows day. When
you
think,
Michael,
of someone...
No, that's the theory, but his parents, there is no... He has two other siblings, this JD. He has two siblings. He had a mother and father. The father was a minister in the United Church of Christ, I think, a very gentle, soft-spoken man who suffered from some depression. The mother, by all reports, was this loving mother. And I know each kid has a different parent, but I cannot imagine his parents doing that much damage to him. There's no evidence of it. So you say it's a power person. All I can think of is sometimes you talk about ancestral power person dynamics that have come down through the DNA, and he might have gotten something in spades, but I don't think it was from his parents.
Well, if I think about a father who's depressed, there's no behavior that I would put past a depressed father, especially in remembering that stress is the thing that brings about the power person dynamics. Remember the early days when your children were small, how much stress there was?
Yeah.
And while I think of this person as a person I meet on the street or I met at the dinner or, you know, I went to a party with, I really don't know anything about them when they're under tremendous stress and what kind of words, actions, and behaviors come out of them. I can't know that, but I guarantee there's a relationship between it and what he does under stress. And yes, of course, the genetic component of it, or the idea here is not to figure it out. The idea here is to look at every disturbed part of your own mind that gets projected into your brain's image of him, and of course make that your work to clean up what comes forward.
Well, you know, there's a ton of it.
Good. Well, that's the idea. So that 12 pages is really, you know, in AA terms, it's your inventory.
Wow. Well, that makes me want to just go to bed. Pull the covers up over the head. Can't face this. This is huge.
Okay. It is huge. It is. I mean, the level you're going to go to with that worksheet. And it might be a helpful time to go back in the videos from the live codependence workshop when we were originally presenting that and start to go through those videos, because you'll have from this set of brain cells, the experiences you've been through with Jacob and with him and with your daughter will give a whole, just spread a whole new light as you go through those videos and take each one of those principles that's presented in the codependence intensive, whether it's the communication tool or the forgiveness tool or the codependence worksheet itself. And it's just going to open spaces deeper than one normally could imagine would ever be open within oneself. And no, it's not pleasant. It's not Dr. Feelgood. You know, were you on the show yesterday?
Yes. I missed a chunk of it in the middle because of a phone call, but I was back in, so I hope I didn't miss something crucial.
Well, the piece that is occurring to me is, you know, the woman that I was speaking about has been doing this work for about 30 years and was willing, I mean, we just did this live processing on the phone. Mm-hmm. And, you know, she's scheduled herself for shoulder surgery because she's got this shoulder injury and shoulder pain. But, you know, she's, you know, I want to get it fixed, which, you know, I mean, it's so excruciating. At some points, she couldn't pick up a glass of water.
Oh, yeah, I do remember.
And when I invited her to go in deeper, cancel some goals, what surfaced was a 30-some-year-old memory of being raped. And her rapist slamming the shoulder down on the surface, whatever surface he was holding her on.
Mm-hmm.
And her pain stopped. Remember, pain is the energy that results from holding on to a pattern that doesn't belong anywhere in tissue. Every bit of pain that we experience. And so am I willing to breathe into, you know, I thought it was, you know, it was awesome. She shared with me that as soon as that memory started to surface, she had put the video on hold. I'd invited her to watch Dr. Sarno's video, documentary.
All right.
And mm-hmm. it stimulated some things, so she put it on hold, and she was just touching it. And then all of a sudden, this memory surfaced. And the first thing she said she wanted to do, that she actually reached for the remote to turn it back on again. And she caught herself, like, no, I'm going to stay with this. And just went into that whole experience, which, you know, it's pretty horrific.
Mm-hmm.
But mm-hmm. pain in her shoulder that seemed to be about what the medicos told her was bone on bone, the tissue's worn away, you can't do anything else but surgery, the pain went away. Pain has to do with energy. And so any time that there's been a painful experience in our lives, there's an energetic pattern there that needs to be opened, and we need to return the mind to the point at which the original offense occurred, which, as I've said many times before, is not a function of memory. It doesn't mean I have to go back and remember the terrible thing that happened. It's a function of forgiveness. So when I recognize there's a goal there and I cancel the goal, that's how I access the original energy. And that's the process. And, you know, I certainly understand why the Greeks turned forgiveness into pardoning, and it's all about how I'm going to let everybody else off the hook for what's happening inside of me. I understand why that happened, because who wants to look at something like that, except somebody who understands how healing works and is ready to move through things and be finished with it.
So can I ask a question of going back to that person worksheet? Your suggestion was that I do this worksheet as if I am JD.
Right.
So if I am clear in my own mind, I don't have any trauma to look at, theoretically, then I would not have been able to answer any of these questions at all or even imagine what he would have said.
Say that again, if you could repeat that for me.
Yeah. If I were clear without issues, then doing this worksheet as JD wouldn't have yielded any information at all. I wouldn't have been able to answer the questions because I don't have any resonating issues. Because I was able to fill this out using my imagination, you're saying these are my issues. If I didn't have issues, I wouldn't have been able to fill out the worksheet at all.
Well, you know, there are two perspectives from which we can view an issue that someone else has and do it without projection of our own issues. There are two ways to do it. One is where I project my issue and I, oh, you upset me so much. I'm so angry with you. Look what you're doing with all your anger and all the things you're doing to me. And what I know then is I've done anger to myself and other people, and it's my work to forgive. Mm-hmm. On the other side of that, if I've done my work around it, I can see it because I've got the brain cells for it, but I see it from a point of view of compassion, being able to hold space. for what this person has gone through. If I haven't worked that energy totally through in me, I'm not going to be able to see from a place of compassion and understanding where that person, what that person's been through, and be able to hold the space for them. I have to do my work around it first.
Okay, but
and so somewhere in me have to be the brain cells to recognize it.
So why, because I answered these from the point of view of JD, doesn't mean I was angry at him or hated him at all. I feel as if I do hold him in love and compassion. I did that throughout, but I was still able to answer the question.
So did you notice your regulatory speech just now?
No.
Did you notice your regulatory speech? So it might be worth reviewing it for a moment. So
what did I say?
It does not mean that I have anger or hate toward him. So what you just told me is, in relationship to JD, somewhere in you, some brain cells related to anger and hate are vibrating.
That's true. Okay.
Otherwise, you wouldn't say those words. You'd say, oh, I have compassion and understanding for him. But the minute that I tell myself I don't have this, I mean, the only way I speak out of brain cells is if they're firing. So maybe it's time to do some worksheets around anger and hate resonated by JD and see if anger and hate were dynamics experienced with your power person.
Okay.
And get to where you can breathe fully and freely and clearly when you confront anything that the man does. Was that a surprise for you?
Yeah, I thought I really was pretty clear about all that, but I guess not. It's been years, and I've seen how in pain he must be and how desperate he must be to cut off his family and to change away from even this country, to get away from his life, and yet continue to blame everyone else in his life and not look at his own, what he's doing. I've seen him as a man with an illness who maybe in the next life will somehow get another chance. But I'm not clear yet what you're saying. It is, I can feel it now. It is very frustrating to have someone hate us so much when we've done our best to not be hateful, to have cared about him and protected him even, and taken care of his children. I guess there's just some more work to do there.
What's happening with your breath right now?
I just started breathing again. What does the word obfuscate mean? I should have looked it
obfuscate.
Up.
Obfuscate means to cover up. You know, there's a picture on the wall over there, and it's clear and it's crisp and everybody can see it, and I throw mud on it to obfuscate the detail in the picture,
mm-hmm.
to cover it up, to hide it. And that's basically what the mind does with things.
Mm-hmm.
That's one of the power person dynamics. Many people will, you know, there's an issue, excuse me for a second, there's an issue going on, and boy, it's not one of those issues I want to deal with. Man, I've got so much trauma around that issue. I'm never going to go there.
Yeah.
And so the person who's good at obfuscation will turn it into a conversation about the weather. Or turned into mm-hmm. a conversation about, oh, that thing I read in the paper the other day. Did you hear about that hateful person? Or, yeah. You know, you're the one who really has a problem here. This has got nothing to do with me. Why do you keep doing this thing? That's obfuscation, rather than taking a breath and going, whew. In a sense, the story I was sharing yesterday about this woman, you know, when she realized, when she canceled a goal and all of a sudden realizes his shoulder was being repeatedly jammed into the surface, whatever it was, as she's being raped, what did her mind want to do? Obfuscate. Oh, I'm gonna go back to Sarno's video. And she caught herself.
Yeah.
She's like, oh, wait a minute. No. But that would be a form of obfuscation. I'm going to cover this up. I'm going to hide it.
Right.
Rather than go right into it and let myself fully access and experience what's there. That's a tough thing to do.
On page 3, it asked some questions I couldn't answer, and so I just put not applicable. Number 1, how did it feel when my power person, name the power person, played this dynamic out with me? I wrote in the paragraph below on the lines, no power person, because I couldn't see either of his parents being that power person. Then going on down, number 10, what did I perceive my power person's needs to be? Not applicable.
Right.
What did I do to meet my power person's needs? Not applicable. What did I perceive I had to give up in order to meet my power person's needs? Not applicable.
I would make a slight adjustment in that, in each of those questions.
Okay. Okay.
I would mark unconscious at this point.
Okay.
And then I would get into a quiet and meditative place. So I'm out of my mind. I get my mind to shut up.
Okay.
And I ask for guidance. And when guidance comes, you know, one of the intensives we do, we actually haven't done it for years now, is an intuitive development. And in that, we do an experiential thing where people get to get friendly with perceiving in ways other than information coming from the 5 senses.
Yeah.
And so allowing yourself to get into that receptive state, and it may not be, you know, it's the color blue or it's this or it's that, or it may not be a literal ABC intellectual thing, but an example of that might be, you know, so I'm going to just breathe on this. I don't have any idea what his power person's needs were. I can't even imagine that. But what I'm going to do is I'm going to cancel my need to know what the power person's needs were. And I'm just going to take a breath, and I'm going to ask to be guided. And here's how it usually shows up for me. The first few seconds that I'm shown something, I ignore it, or I pretend I don't see it, or you know, that I'm not aware of it. And then usually a few seconds into it, I'll go, oh, geez, I was just shown something. What was that? And I have to go back and let myself, because it's a subtle, you know, when they talk about the still small voice, it's a subtle energy that gives you guidance around things that your mind can't, you know, your mind gives you clunk, clunk, solid, here's the evidence, here's the information. But
right.
Guidance from Rukka comes in forms that, you know, sometimes aren't even recognized and many times are not noticed until you really pay attention. And if you do, and if you're breathing, then we'll be, oh, wait a minute, what was that? I can remember the first time this happened to me. And it was like the scenario that I was working with and, you know, locked into was kind of like right there in front of my mind. And I just accidentally, and this was how I experienced it, I just kind of accidentally looked over to my left. And I'm talking about mechanically turned my head and my eyes and looked over to the left. And there was a whole scenario there that I realized I'd been ignoring by focusing on this. And my mind was kind of shocked at first. I can remember being shocked at that. And I had to go back and look. I mean, literally, I could turn my head and move my eyes over to the left. And there was the whole scenario, and I had been ignoring it. I had been shutting it off by staying focused on this thing coming from my mind. So for me, that's how, you know, going back decades ago, that started to show up for me. And I noticed this. It was like, well, this is really weird. But, oh, my God, there's the whole, there it is right there. It's been there all the time. I've just trained myself to ignore it. And that might be one of the vehicles that allows you to let in guidance that will give you something different. And it might look like you might find yourself in kind of a reverie. I know this happens to me often. In fact, you've heard me do it on the show. You know, I'm listening to someone, and then all of a sudden I say, well, you know, I get a sense of that. And what I describe is what I've just been shown on a subtle level that I couldn't call it intellectual knowledge. Was just, I'm getting this sense. And, you know, and oftentimes out of that unfolds the whole scenario. And I've found over the years, and I trust it enough that when it happens, I take it to the bank. You know, it's like, okay, so here's what I get. Bing, 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 bing. And that has been proven to me to be as solid a way to let information into my mind as if somebody put it in writing in front of me, and that I can rely on it and count on it. But it's not what we normally do, and it takes some practice and training to do that. But oftentimes for me, it's like, oh, my God, look at that. I was just ignoring that. I was like not looking there. So that's kind of the sense I would, you know, that would be the sense I would invite you to look from and just see what comes. And it'll turn out to be so much more real than what your mind is doing.
Okay. I've got something already, but I know we're almost at the end of the show. The one thing I know.
Well, we've got four or 5 minutes.
One thing I know about J.D. that I had heard is that his mother was a very young, you know, pulchritudinous, and he was the only son, and there was an incident where he, something happened where as a teenager he hopped into bed with her for comfort or company, and he got aroused and jumped out of bed and raged at her for being a seductress or something. And that is the only traumatic thing that I heard through my daughter. She learned about this some way. It isn't something that's discussed or anything much, but could an incident like that, actually the mother-in-law spoke to me about it. She said, I think he was aroused. He was 14 or something. And he jumped out of bed. Could that incident
2,000%.
Oh,
2,000%. The guilt, the fear, the self-condemnation, the rage over the kind of pain that he would have over guilt. I mean, I can easily imagine how that would impact somebody's whole life, especially his life with women.
Well,
and of course, his offspring.
Continue.
Are from that relationship with women.
Okay.
I'd breathe on that one if I were you. Yeah, be with that and breathe it and see what comes up.
There's so much more coming out now, but I won't do it now. I'll do it on my own.
Well, we'll hold the space for breathing and writing it down, and we're here to support you.
Thanks. Boy.
All right, dear heart. Awesome.
Okay.
Awesome questioning.
Thank
awesome
you,
work. Everybody will benefit from this.
There. Yeah.
Perfect. Perfect. What a great example. All right, dear heart. The phone's going to cut us off any second, so know we're extending love in your direction. And we're glad you're feeling